I'll be reading from Barbara Kingsolver's The Poisonwood Bible, starting on page 438. For those of you that don't have the paperback fat edition, this would be the last chapter of Bel and the Serpent, Leia. Mother did not rant or tear her hair. She behaved as if someone else had already told her before we got there. Silently, she dressed, tied back her hair, and set herself to a succession of chores, beginning with tearing down the mosquito netting from all of our beds. We were afraid to ask what she was doing. We didn't know whether she wanted us all to get malaria now for punishment, or if she had simply lost her mind. So we stood out of the way and watched, all of us, even Father. For once, he had no words to instruct our minds and improve our souls. No parable that would turn Ruth May's death by snakebite into a lesson on the glory of God. My father, whose strong hands always seized whatever came along and molded it to his will, seemed unable to grasp what had happened. She wasn't baptized yet, he said. I looked up when he said this, startled by such a pathetically inadequate observation. Was that really what mattered to him right now, the condition of Ruth May's soul? Mother ignored him, but I studied his face in the bright morning light. His blue eyes, with their left-sided squint weakened by the war, had a vacant look. His large reddish ears repelled me. My father was a simple, ugly man. It's true that she wasn't baptized. If any one of us had cared about that, we could lay the blame on Father. He'd maintained that Ruth May was still too young to take the responsibility of accepting Christ, but in truth I think he was holding her back for the sake of pageantry. He was going to baptize his own child along with all of Kalanga's on that great day down at the river when his dream finally came true. It would lend an appearance of sincerity to the occasion. Now he seemed narrow-witted and without particular dreams. I couldn't stand to look at him standing in the doorway, his body hanging from its frame with nothing but his own useless hands for company. And all he could think to say to his wife was, "This can't be." It couldn't be, but it was. And Mother alone among us seemed to realize that. With a dark scarf over her hair and the sleeves of her stained white blouse rolled up, she did her work as deliberately as the sun or moon, a heavenly body tracking its course through our house. Her tasks moved her continually away from us, her senseless shadows, a husband and living daughters. With determined efficiency, she gathered up everything she would need from one room before she moved to the next, in the way I remember her doing when we were all much younger and needed her more. She went out to the kitchen house, fired the stove, warmed a pan of water, then carried it back into the house and set it on the big dining table where Nelson had laid the body on a bedsheet. Mother bathed Ruth May with a washcloth as if she were a baby. I stood with my back to the wall, remembering too much of another time as I watched her rub carefully under the chin and in the folds at the back of the elbows and knees. In our house in Bethlehem, I used to stand outside the bathroom door where I could see the two of them in the mirror, Mother singing soft questions and kissing her answers into the tiny outstretched palms. Ada and I were 9 then, too old to be jealous of a baby, but still I had to wonder if she had ever loved me that much. With twins, she could only have loved each of us by half, and Ada was the only one who required more of her. A honey creeper sang from the bushes outside the window. It seemed impossible that an ordinary bright day should be proceeding outside our house. Mother spread a small soft hand onto hers and washed the fingers one at a time. She cradled and lifted the head to rinse it, taking care not to get the soapy water in Ruth May's eyes. As she dried the limp blonde hair with a towel, she leaned in close, inhaling the scent of my sister's scalp. I felt invisible. By the force of my mother's desire to conduct this ritual in private, she had caused me to disappear. Still, I couldn't leave the room. After she dried and wrapped her baby in a towel, she hummed quietly while combing out the tangles and plaiting the damp hair. Then she began to cut out mosquito netting into long sheets and stitch the layers together. At last we understood. She was making a shroud. "Leia, help me move this table outside," she said when she was finished. It was the first time she'd spoken in more than half a day to anyone, and I jumped to do as I was told. She moved Ruth May to her own bed while we moved the big heavy table out into the center of the front yard. We had to turn it on in to get it out the door. When we set it down, the legs settled soundly under the dust so it did not wobble as it had always done inside the house. Mother went back inside and returned with the shrouded body in her arms. Gently she laid Ruth May out on the table, spending a long time arranging her arms and legs within the sheer cloth. The shade of the mango stretched all the way across the yard, and I realized it must be afternoon, a fact that surprised me. I looked at several familiar things, one at a time, a striped green mango laying in the grass, my own hand, our dining table. All these things seemed like objects I hadn't seen before. I looked at the table and forced my mind to accept the words, "This is my dead sister." But Ruth May was shrouded in so many misty layers of mosquito netting I could barely make out any semblance of a dead child inside. She looked more like a billowy cloud that could rise right up through the trees whenever Mother finally let her go.